So there was a time in my life, in my work life, where I got to work with a lot of people from Gen X, the generation behind me. I'm the tail end of the boomers. And I really liked that because it was like I kind of got to know them. They were the little kids when I was growing up, and now they were people I was working with. Except I picked up a really bad habit from them, which I still struggle with today. They had this tendency to give people nicknames, which were sometimes kind of mean. So for instance, this group of them that I was working with did something that they weren't supposed to. And someone went and told their supervisor what they did, and they got in trouble. And so when they confronted this tattletale about the fact that he had gotten them in trouble, he said, "I was just doing what I was told to do." So for the rest of the time that we knew him, his name was Nuremberg. Which, I mean, still laugh about it, and it was funny, it was accurate, and it was wrong. But you know what? It's a really hard habit to break. So after that, when I was going to a faith community in downtown DC, there was a man on Sundays who would come in, and he wouldn't be wearing shoes, and all he would be wearing clothing-wise is a pair of cut-off jeans that he had slit up both sides. So he was really muscular. He had this pretty wild hair. And so I called him, in my mind, loincloth man, because that's exactly what he was. So I would sit in the back of the church in those days in the place where the parents and the kids sat. And it was really interesting to watch the looks on these parents' faces, because loincloth man would come in and he would head over to where the kids are, because that's the fun section, right? And you would see the look on the parents' faces like, should I be worried about this guy? And then their faces would sort of transform and they would remember, oh, I'm supposed to welcome the stranger. So they would go and welcome him. And one day, the pastor heard me calling him loincloth man. And he said, you know, Suzanne, he has a name. His name is Elijah. And he's a mystic, and he's been hanging out on the streets for decades, and he's able to control his body temperature so that he goes around the way he's dressed all year long, almost no matter how cold it gets. He was also just a really nice guy. So I was kind of ashamed of myself, which I think is why the pastor said that, and he didn't want people going around calling him loincloth man anymore. So I tried to reform, but as a Lutheran, I am ever reforming, and every once in a while, I still slip into this habit. So when it comes to Paul, in my mind, I call Paul annoying guy, which I am confessing to you because we are spending the Easter season with Paul. The next few weeks, we are going to be hearing about Paul's adventures and look at some of Paul's letters. And in my opinion, Paul can be annoying and frustrating and self-righteous and difficult. I have had this struggle with Paul, annoying guy, for a long time, even before seminary. I was so frustrated with him that I even took a class before I went to seminary on Paul. And then I took an even more advanced course when I was in seminary. The best that I can say now is that I dislike him less than I used to. But he's still a challenge to me. His annoyingness, though, is probably one thing that made him so good at fulfilling his call. And he was really good at what Jesus called him to do. In modern terms, we would call him a church planter. He went all over the Mediterranean and is probably more responsible than anyone else for spreading the way, as those who follow Jesus are called in today's text. Conversion seems almost too mild a word for what happened to Saul. In chapter 8 of Acts, Saul, as he was called then, was ravaging the church, entering house after house, dragging off men and women and committing them to prison. Today's text, we read that he was breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord. And then on the road to Damascus, everything changes. Saul's trip to Damascus starts him on an epic journey that will take him to many places and many dangers, including imprisonment and shipwrecks. He does it all out of his love for Jesus. After the events on the road to Damascus. Now Saul is going to become what he thought he already was, God's instrument. In his second career of serving God, however, he lives out what it means to be enveloped by the light of God. And we might remember Jesus' words from last week. Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have come to believe. Spoken to Thomas, but also to us. Those of us, we are the ones. Jesus was speaking to you, those who did not get to see Jesus, but yet have come to believe. Here, Paul is the first example we have of this. Saul believes without seeing Jesus after the resurrection, and he becomes Paul. But we see blindness in more than one person here. Paul's sight is restored. Ananias, too, has a spot of blindness with regard to the power of God. He knows Saul as the evil authority, an enemy of the saints of God. He knows Saul as having free rein to bind those invoking Jesus. And unsurprisingly, he doesn't want to go anywhere near him. But Jesus asks him to. Go, for he is an instrument whom I have chosen to bring my name before Gentiles and kings and before the people of Israel. And Ananias becomes Jesus' instrument to help Saul become Paul. God sees the humanity of those we do not know or trust or who are different. We are often more like Ananias. I stopped calling Elijah loincloth man because someone helped me see his humanity. A faith community took a core biblical value of welcoming a stranger and became open to seeing Elijah as a person and welcoming him. Probably none of us will have an impact on the church the way Paul did. But this story can help us to keep an eye out for what we are blind to. Who do we not see in our community or outside it?